the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, September 9th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Be there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work. Shoulders back, stiff backbone, smile on your face, and a prayer on your lips, and everything should be just hunky-dory. All right, time for the official start to the big blogcast.
The Daily Denogram.
Yes, it is. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. This one's a little different. This is a definition. Definition of a lawyer. Noun. Larval stage of a politician. I think that one deserves a rim shot, too. Certainly explains how we got where we are, doesn't it?
Help me! Help me!
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the big blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history.
This is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, I know.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Aren't you excited?
Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, like that's ever going to happen. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1947, the first case of a computer bug being found. In fact, a moth lodged in a relay of a Harvard Mark II computer at Harvard University. Who knew that in the early days of computers, computer bugs consisted of insects? Huh. And it was on this day in 1956, Elvis appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time. This was the performance that launched Elvis into worldwide popularity. And I want to bring this up. Contrary to the myth that they shot him only from the waist up, he actually did appear head to toe when he wasn't dancing or gyrating. Then, when he started to move, they'd switch to a close-up.
Oh, that there was some good TV.
For me, Tulsi Gabbard has become somewhat of a political goddess. I mean, the fact that she ditched the Democrat Party for all the right reasons. She did not join the Republican Party. She remains an independent, for which I really, really respect her. And she's one of the most straight-talking individuals in the field of politics these days. She's brilliant, but she has a track record. She has a resume that is just incomparable. She can run circles around just about every politician out there. And she had some strong words for Kamala Harris after Harris said that she was honored to have received endorsements from Liz and Dick Cheney. See, earlier this week, Dick Cheney announced that he was going to be voting for Harris in November and echoed his frequent criticisms of Trump in his endorsement statement, referring to the former president as the greatest threat America has ever faced. And you know, and I know, that that's total BS. Bullcorn. I'm sorry, that's BC. Bullcorn. He also falsely accused Trump of directing his followers to violently overturn the election, ignoring the fact that Trump told protesters to remain peaceful. We've got audio on it. We have video on it. It can't get any plainer than that. So when Dick Cheney is willing to lie to you, boldface, just as his daughter did, I mean, come on. I mean, the fact that we take the Cheneys seriously at all really is ridiculous. I mean, these are two people, Liz and Dick Cheney. If anybody should be mocked, they should. Because they've made a mockery of what it means to serve the United States. They didn't serve the United States, they served themselves. So in response to the endorsement from Dick, as well as his daughter Liz, Harris said she was honored. She said, actually, I was honored to have their endorsements, and I think that they both, as leaders who are well-respected, are making an important statement that it's okay and it's important to put country above party. That's what Kamala Harris said. Well, Saturday, Tucker Carlson had an event in Colorado. Big auditorium event. I don't know what the exact function was, but it was videoed. And Gabbard joined Tucker and offered her thoughts on the Cheney endorsement.
I have a very simple message for my Democrat friends, my independent friends, those who may not be sure about who they're voting for in this election. Dick Cheney has just made the choice very clear. A vote for Kamala Harris is a vote for Dick Cheney, the architect of everything that has gone wrong in the Middle East for the last few decades. And so it's interesting because if you listen to the New York Times or some of the other mainstream media, they're saying, oh, you know, don't expect much from Kamala Harris in the way of policies and details and plans, and we're not going to know much about what kind of president she's going to be because she doesn't have much time. They're conveniently ignoring the fact that she's been there working in the White House the last 3.5 years alongside Joe Biden. She's been the last one in the room, according to her, as these big decisions are being made. But we look at who she says, her response to the Dick Cheney announcement today was that she was honored to have his endorsement. And we got military veterans in the house. Got a lot of you who probably served in the Middle East like I did. And so it sickened me, Tucker, to read those words today, both from Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney, and Kamala Harris, because we have people who we care very much about who were killed in those wars because of Dick Cheney. Kamala Harris has told us all we need to know about what kind of commander-in-chief she would be. And I don't know about you, but I would not trust her for a moment with the lives of my brothers and sisters in uniform.
So as you just heard, as usual, she spoke with 100% clarity and truth. Clarity and truth. Man, wouldn't it be neat if we could pass a law of the land, that politicians, candidates to be politicians, and all government workers must, from here on forward, speak with 100% truth and clarity. But then again, in order to do that, we'd have to repeal the First Amendment, wouldn't we? Going into this segment, there's no reason why anybody should be surprised by this, but a political analyst for CNN, that's the surprising part, again, it's CNN, poured more cold water on Kamala Harris's campaign during a segment on Thursday. Man, going all the way back to Thursday, but this is big stuff. And he cited new poll numbers from a key demographic. Now, the political director for CNN, David Chalian, noted that white voters without college degrees are a particularly problematic group for Harris, whereas Trump has a significant advantage. Again, not real surprising. I think the most surprising part about this this entire story is the fact that it's coming from CNN. But Chalian said that if you look at the white voters without college degrees, this is a Trump-based constituency, obviously. You see his huge numbers with this group. You see that this is a trouble sign for Harris. And then he further noted that the vice president's also struggling with another key demographic, white college-educated voters in battleground states. And let's quote him again. He said, she probably wants to make up some ground with white college-educated voters across these battlegrounds as well. Now, a significant decline in support for Harris among white voters, regardless of their educational background, could, of course, jeopardize her chances. And that, again, is according to him. Meanwhile, the Biden-Harris administration got some more bad news this week. The U.S. economy only added 142,000 jobs in August, though the unemployment rate marginally decreased to 4.2% from 4.3%. according to the Labor Department data that was released on Friday. There will probably be a revision to those numbers. There always are revisions. Anyhow, the labor market slowdown is a key element that's going to assist the Federal Reserve in deciding how big of an interest rate decrease to announce later this month. The August stats fell short of the projected 161,000 employment growth. And the updated report also included noteworthy updates for previous months. Just 89,000 new jobs were created in July. And that was 25,000 fewer than first anticipated. The June increases were reduced to 118,000 from 61,000. You know, I mean, the economy in general, but personal finances in particular, has become the top issue heading into the election. And this is according to the vast majority of polling over the past year. Okay, so they've extrapolated this out of several different polls over several months. Back on Wednesday, J.D. Vance torched a New York Times reporter during a rally in Michigan who tried to get his response to a slightly positive economic report that hit earlier in the week. The reporter inquired about the latest economic data, which reported inflation at under 3%, which is the lowest level since mid-2021. But what was intended as a straightforward request for comment became a platform for Vance to criticize the current administration. So the Times reporter, I don't have the reporter's name, and I'm sorry, but I just don't. The reporter said, I wanted to ask you about the latest economic news from this morning. With inflation now being under 3%, the lowest rate since mid-2021, what is your reaction to that news? So J.D. Vance says, well, I think the crowd reaction says it all, because the crowd was very obvious. It wasn't booing, but you could tell by the response that they're just, you know, the economy stinks. So Vance began gesturing to the energized audience's audible boos to the question. He says, look, when they say that inflation is down, they mean from a baseline where groceries are already 30% more expensive than they were when Donald Trump was president. And they're not saying it's coming down. They're just saying it's not going up as fast as it was 3 years ago. That's not a reputation or a record to brag on. That's a record to be ashamed of. Amen. Yeah, have you noticed that J.D. Vance is just so damned good at coming back at these damn reporters who keep trying time and time and time again to do a gotcha on him? And they can't do it because Vance is way the hell too smart for them. So then he continued, and I love this part. He says, why did it take them so long to get inflation to where it is? And why are the prices so high? It's because Kamala Harris failed to do her job. So if they want to go around, and this is, you know, it's funny, Kamala Harris is on the one hand, is going to say on day one, we're going to tackle the affordability crisis. And like I said earlier, Kamala Harris has been the vice president for 3.5 years. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, she's in effect been the acting president, because we all know Joe Biden isn't home. So she's been the one controlling government policy for 3.5 years. She says she wants to tackle the affordability crisis on day one. And then on the other hand, she'll say, well, we've already got inflation under control. Well, which is it, Kamala? Which is it? The simple truth is America's credit card debt is getting higher. Americans are finding the basic necessities in middle class life less affordable. Americans are becoming, especially young people, are becoming paupers in their own country. If we don't do better, our young generation, they're just not going to own anything. They're not going to have anything. They're going to be renters in the country that their parents and grandparents built. Inflation is a disaster. Well, he wasn't wrong. He nailed her on all counts. So, should it be any real surprise that even on CNN, you have an analyst who is warning that Harris's numbers are slipping? This country is in god-awful shape. God-awful shape. And it's in god-awful shape for only one reason. The damned Democrats have held the White House since January of 2021. Everything that Donald Trump had going for this country, a strong economy, terrific foreign policy, peace through strength, all of that, and of course many other things that we could throw in there. There's a whole laundry list of pluses that Donald Trump had built for this country. All of that was ripped up and invalidated by Joe Biden at the Resolute desk on January 20th of 2021. When you look at some of the endorsements that Donald Trump has picked up very recently, they're very important endorsements. I mean, among them, you've got Elon Musk. You've got RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, of course, that was a big one. And another big one, don't underestimate the importance of the endorsement that Trump got from Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, because Kemp and Trump have feuded in the past, and yet Brian Kemp is voting for Trump. But now another name can be added to that list. This is a name you probably don't know, but this is a very influential person, in that he's a Silicon Valley investor, Naval Ravikant. And he spoke to Megyn Kelly on her Sirius XM show the other day and said that it was the lawfare against Trump that convinced him to support him. And quoting him, he said, "It was the lawfare that kind of brought me off the sidelines. It's really disgusting behavior, because this is how you descend into a complete banana republic with military coups and military rule. The moment you can start weaponizing the law against your enemies electively, that's the beginning of the end." Now, he's not wrong there. And he mentioned a famous quote by former Peruvian President Oscar Benavides, which said, "For my friends, everything. For my enemies, the law." So then Ravikant said, that is, once you're in charge, you get to dictate who the law applies to. And you're in a very slippery slope. And slippery slopes are real, by the way. If you were to actually look at the charges that were brought against Trump, and I actually read them quite carefully, these were really trumped up. They were really made up. You violate the statute of limitations. You try to drum things up into a felony when there was no evidence of such. It was a mischaracterization of business expenses. I'm sorry. It was a miscategorization. Of business expenses. He says, when you have complex business dealings like I do, and like many people do, you can always find something. It's this selective prosecution. It's a selective prosecution that allows them to get away with this. And a lot of the progressive DA movement that comes out of the George Soros, that comes out of George Soros and others, is based on this understanding that, hey, actually, we can choose whether or not to prosecute certain people, and these are elected offices that are either in territory where the voters are really favorable to us, or they're really cheap to run because there's no organized opposition. So let's just organize and take over prosecution. See how Mr. Ravikant was categorizing this, characterizing it. I mean, it's just, but he's right on target. And, he had a lot more to say. Thank God I have a transcript from it. He says, that's what happened in San Francisco. If you want the case against Kamala Harris, it's the fact that she was DA in San Francisco, and San Francisco's a mess. And in fact, afterwards, she advocated for Los Angeles County District Attorney George Gascon, who's the guy destroying LA through basically not prosecuting criminals and going after business owners. So this is a selective prosecution thing. This is a selective prosecution thing that's a disaster. You can take a deep blue or deep red state, you can take a deep blue or deep red jury, and you can basically creatively interpret these infinite laws that we have to find anybody guilty of a crime. I think there's another famous saying, you find me the man, I'll find you the crime. I mean, this guy, Ravikant, you know, was quoting a police chief in Joseph Stalin's Soviet regime. You find me the man, I'll find you the crime. So he continued. He says, the moment you start breaking down this wall and you get into weaponizing justice, this is the scary stuff. This is the stuff that ends a republic or turns into a one-party state, better known as a dictatorship. I think the weaponization of the justice system, the willingness to go into lawfare, That's the thing that's going to lead to violence. That's the thing that will lead to a dissolution and a breakup and something worse in the United States. When these guys start playing with going after their political enemies, when Alvin Bragg runs on the explicit campaign to take down Trump, and then they go hunting through and looking for anything and drumming up any charge and go after him with the most favorable juries and in the most favorable part of the country, and the just control the evidence and control the narrative, that's the beginning of the end. You have to excuse me there, but I was reading that verbatim from a transcript. And finally, he says, and the people who are in Silicon Valley and the donors who are out there supporting this lawfare, they're dead to me. I love that part. He said, these people are destroying the ground on which they stand. Do they think they won't be next? Excellent point. Excellent point. Do they really think they won't be next? So, you know, I keep mocking Sean Hannity for saying at every election, this is the most important election in our nation's history. But this time around, holy cow, he's right on. One more thing in reference to the previous segment. When Mr. Ravikant was quoting the former president of Peru, what was his name? Oscar Benavides. And he's famous for saying, for my friends, everything, for my enemies, the law. Well, I want to remind you of something that Barack Obama said during his first term in office. He said, we will reward our friends and we will punish our enemies. Now, when he said we will punish our enemies, he wasn't referring to China, North Korea, Iran, or Russia. He was referring to the Republican Party and conservatives in general, particularly Christians. Now, think about those 8 years that Obama was president. Think about how friendly, how he bent over backwards to appease Iran and how he used to chastise Christians. I mean, that was the evil empire within our own country, the Obama administration. Well, who's really running the country these days? It's still Barack Obama. So Mr. Naval Ravikant was right on target. He's seeing this. And you know what? There are a lot of other very influential, well-heeled people just like him who are seeing the same things, and they don't like it. Believe me, this election coming up on us in just a few weeks now, we're down weeks, right? This is an incredibly important election because if this election gets away from us, the country will get away from us. All right, enough on that. I got something here in that came across my desk over the weekend I wanted to pass along to you because this is just so cool and it's heartwarming. Gee, who doesn't like Sir Charles? Charles Barkley. My gosh, he's just a cool dude. And about 4 months now after he promised $1 million to St. Mary's Academy in New Orleans East, the private school where two students cracked a centuries-old mathematical equation has just received its first $100,000 from Mr. Barkley. Now, the way he was going to dole this out is $100,000 every year for 10 years. But this is so interesting. Kelsia Johnson and Nakia Jackson, who've since graduated from St. Mary's Academy, were featured on 60 Minutes in May after solving the Pythagorean theorem. Now, that's an equation that had stumped mathematicians for roughly 2,000 years, and the segment inspired Barkley to donate to the school. A representative from the Charles Barkley Foundation said that the former professional basketball player is focused on transforming future generations through educational opportunities. Well, he said that Barkley has a love and passion for what the Academy stands for and how it's shaping the lives and futures of young girls in New Orleans. Well, Pamela Rogers, a president of the St. Mary's Academy, said in the press release that the staff are forever grateful for the 10-year gift and Barkley's support for their students. Rogers said, this transformative gift will assist students as they excel and achieve whatever dream they create within the walls of St. Mary's Academy. Well, the donation is going to be used to enhance St. Mary's educational experience and and provide students with opportunities to grow within and outside of the classroom, according to the press release. All right, so how about this Pythagorean theorem? I'd heard about it. I remember my math teacher, my algebra teacher. Gosh, what was her name? Back in high school, talking about the Pythagorean theorem. See, during their senior year, Johnson and Jackson spent last winter break focused on a bonus question for a math contest in their class. Now, the bonus question was far more difficult than what students typically see written on tests or across a classroom chalkboard. In fact, it was deemed impossible to answer until Johnson and Jackson proved that wasn't the case. We're talking about big league exciting stuff here. The pair almost obsessively worked for months to solve the theorem. They wouldn't let it rest. They even spent Mardi Gras break meeting on Zoom rather than on the chaotic, float-ridden streets of New Orleans, which is hard to do if you live around that area. Oh, my God. Anyhow, Johnson told the Times-Picayune newspaper there, she said, for 2 months, we worked together nonstop during school, after school, at home, at lunch. And with the use of trigonometry, Johnson and Jackson eventually solved the Pythagorean theorem, which is a Greek principle surrounding the relations between three sides of a right triangle. The mathematical puzzle has been proven in many ways over thousands of years, but never with trigonometry. To the Comedy Corner with a very funny Gary Delina.
I come to you from the small village of Brooklyn, New York. And when I was 21, I decided to skip town and I moved to London, which was really cool, and I did it because of this. This right here, I decided I wanted to be a rock and roll singer in England. And I want to tell you something. The first thing I discovered was that English singers, when they sing, they sound like cowboys. Living down on the prairie, spend my time working out on the range. Hey, that's great. How'd you write that song? Well, you know, I haven't got a clue. One day, I'm just sitting about the pub with me mates, and boom, it just popped into me. Got it, and there you go. Bob's your uncle. I'd like to see it reversed. I'd like to see a guy singing an English folk song in my old neighborhood. Well, in the village, there lived a young man with a dream. Where'd you come up with that one? You know, I got no idea, right? One day, I'm sitting around with the boys at the corner pizza place, and boom, like a bat hits me in the back of the head, and there you go, Tony's your uncle. I like the English singers, old bands, even like the 60s, Man for Man. Here, help me out with this one. There she was, just a-walking down the street singing. Snapping her fingers and shoveling her feet singing. She looked good, she looked fine. She looked good, she looked fine. Wish I knew the next line. I don't know, and I don't even play the guitar. I do like the English singers, boy. Rod Stewart. Still looks good. He just can't remember his own songs. Wake up, Maggie. I think I got something to say to you. Never mind. Go back to bed. I saw him in New York at Madison Square Garden, oldest audience I'd ever seen. No, I swear, for the encore, they were waving bottles of Metamucil. See, that's the thing. It's not just the artists on stage getting older. We're getting older in the audience. They got to keep updating the lyrics for us. Here, Hermits, Hermits.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely walker.
The Bee Gees.
How can you mend a broken hip?
My favorite band was always The Who. They're still playing. Ow, ow, ow. Paul McCartney, still going strong.
You seen the commercial guy runs to the John. Gotta go right now. Well, I never worry. free when my blood is full. I control it, and I'll tell you how. I get by with a little help from deep ends. I get by with a little help. I stay dry with a little help from deep ends.
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We will catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.